Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFURL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and once again, this edition should really be called The Week Ahead in Ukraine. My guest is Chris Miller, a BuzzFeed News correspondent who covered Ukraine for RFURL for several years not too long ago. He did great work then, and he's now back in Kyiv. He's been there for, or in Ukraine, for the past month. Thanks very much for joining me, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Pleasure to be back.
All right. It's good to talk to you again. Now, my first question is a broad one. Chris, on this current stint, you've been in Ukraine for a month now, and you spent 11 years there in the past. During the worst parts of the war between government forces and Russia-backed militants in the Donbass in 2014, 2015, and also in the quieter years after that, somewhat quieter, that is. Now, with Russia now massing what many say are more than 100,000 troops near Ukraine's borders and in Crimea, and also pressuring NATO to rule out membership for Ukraine forever, what's the biggest change you've noticed in the country? Whether it's the mood, attitudes about NATO or Russia, really, whatever your impressions are, I'd find your perspective interesting.
Sure. You know, I guess maybe it's easiest just to start from like when I arrived in Ukraine and what the mood was like then. Mm-hmm. It was March 2010, and Viktor Yanukovych, who was ousted by, you know, pro-democracy, pro-European revolutionaries back during the Maidan uprising in 2014, had just been sworn in as president. And, you know, that gave way to this sense of, you know, Ukraine continuing this stronger relationship with Russia. But there was talk then of Ukraine actually becoming a little bit more European. You know, Yanukovych, a lot of people like to paint Yanukovych as this pro-Russian stooge from the outset. And I don't think that's necessarily right. You know, he was definitely pro-Yanukovych and wanted to see his party grow and cement power and control and rob the country. And at that time, Ukrainians were not, let's say, as pro-European as they are today. And that's definitely one of the major changes from, you know, a decade ago. Ukrainians saw themselves as Ukrainians, first and foremost. And there were even really strong regional identities, like people of the Donbass, you know, almost first and foremost, many of them, you know, described themselves as people of the Donbass rather than, you know, Russian or even Ukrainian. You know, they saw they had a really strong regional identity. Mm-hmm. But there was no hunger for Ukraine to be a part of the European Union. There was no strong desire to join NATO at that point. All of that came, you know, much later on, if we fast forward to 2014, when Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula, fomented war in the Donbass. That's when attitudes here among Ukrainians, including those in the east of the country, which enjoyed close ties with Russia, really started to change. And if you look at polling, if you, you know, anecdotally, if you speak to people, whether it's in eastern Ukraine or southern Ukraine or western Ukraine or here in Kyiv in the capital, people most of the time will tell you they view Ukraine's future in the West as a part of Europe. You know, they now enjoy visa-free travel to the European Union, allowing them 90 days to live, experience, travel in an area of the world that was really difficult for much of them to access before. And so they've gotten a taste of what it can be like if Ukraine does take the steps necessary to become eventually in sometime down the road a part of the European Union, or in, you know, in between now and that time, to grow closer ties and enjoy more benefits of the European Union. And Ukrainians largely have become more anti-Russian, if you will. You know, they view Russia less as this friendly neighbor and this brotherly nation, as Vladimir Putin likes to refer to Ukraine as, mm-hmm. and certainly as an adversary and an aggressor. Ukrainians have lived with 8 years almost now of Russia's war that has largely remained in the east of the country, at least in conventional military terms, but right. all Ukrainians have been touched by the war, right? And you've got boys from Western Ukraine who have gone over and fought in the West and given their lives to defend the country. You've got cyber warfare that has happened in Kiev and in Western Ukraine, where the Ukrainian government says Russia has switched off the lights and power, and also attacked Ukraine in the information sphere with various disinformation attacks. And so, Ukrainians see themselves as not this part of Russia's sphere of influence anymore, and very much as their own nation, with this desire to grow and develop, and it sees itself as very much a part of Europe. And I think if I know just in speaking with my many Ukrainian friends here, if you ask them, what are you? They will say Ukrainian. They'll also say European. And they mean it in this sort of Western democratic European sense. But I think that's certainly the biggest change that I've felt in being here over that time. One other thing I would say is important to mention is a little bit more specific to the Russian military threat right now, mm-hmm. and that is Ukraine's military, which was caught flat-footed in 2014 and really failed to react to Russia's forced annexation of Crimea this covert war using its separatist proxies in the east, is that now Russia or Ukraine's military rather is much stronger. They've undergone training from NATO countries, including the United States. They've received lethal aid from the United States, and more recently the UK and several other European and EU countries. It's got one of the largest standing armies in Europe at more than 220,000 active duty soldiers. And President Volodymyr Zelensky just signed an order to expand that by another 100,000 soldiers. On top of all of that, you've got more than 400,000 veterans. And now the formation of these territorial defense brigades that are civilian volunteers taking up arms and training with these veterans in cities across Ukraine to defend itself and themselves against Russia should it attack again. And so you've really got this militarized Ukrainian society that did not exist before 2014, and what is a really, really strong military force. Now, is it going to stop any Russian invasion? If Putin decides to go all in, probably not. But the Ukrainian people are certainly more willing today than they were, years ago to put up a real strong, costly fight.
It's very interesting, Chris. That would actually be a great segue to my next question, but I'm just going to go back a bit to a couple of things you said, one of which was that Ukrainians are on the whole more anti-Russian now. And it strikes me, Putin essentially has accused the West of trying to turn Ukraine into the anti-Russia. But, critics of Putin, and I think a lot of people in Ukraine would say that it is, it's Putin and Russia that have done that job. With the aggression that you mentioned, that Ukrainians have lived under for almost 8 years and experienced in all parts of the country and in different ways. Another thing I would point out or build on that you mentioned is the kind of the idea that now as compared to a decade ago or so. There's more of a kind of European identity. People see themselves as part of Europe, and it's not like they're looking at themselves as part of Russia or the Russian world. And now, this palpably, if you read what Putin has written and listen to what he's said, it does seem like he's really trying to stop that, to reverse that process. And just the big question, and it's quite a breathtaking thing to be doing. And I guess the big question is, how far, or at least one of the big questions, how far Putin and, you know, his government are willing to go to try to do that, to really kind of try to bring Ukraine back into the sphere of influence and back under more, you know, influence and control of Russia. So, I mean, my next question is linked to that, and it's more specific. I don't want to ask you to make predictions, but I want to discuss the current situation as regards the Russian buildup, the military buildup. U.S. officials have been saying for some time, based on intelligence, that Russia has been planning for a possible new invasion, while also saying that it appears Putin has not yet made a decision. There are a lot of opinions about this and about how the U.S. Is dealing with it publicly. But I think almost everyone agrees that there's been no sign that the Russian military buildup has slowed, let alone reversed. And then this weekend, there was a particularly eye-catching article in The Washington Post. Just the opening paragraph, I'll read word for word, said, Russia is close to completing preparations for what appears to be a large-scale invasion of Ukraine that could leave up to 50,000 civilians killed or wounded, decapitate the government in Kyiv within 2 days, and launch a humanitarian crisis with up to 5 million refugees fleeing the resulting chaos, according to updated U.S. military and intelligence assessments briefed to lawmakers and European partners over the past several days. Now, I guess the Ukrainian officials said over the weekend, kind of pushed back on this, saying, well, the chances of further diplomacy or of a diplomatic solution are higher than a military one. But you know, I was certainly struck by this wording of this article. Chris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, first to your last point, I would say, you know, it has been very much so, you know, Vladimir Putin's actions that have pushed Ukraine and Ukrainians further west and really forced a lot of the change that has happened in this country over the years. And, you know, I sort of chuckle because a lot of people here in Ukraine do the same in you know, considering what Vladimir Putin has done to try to keep Ukraine in its sphere of influence, you know, and how it has actually ended up backfiring spectacularly and changed the attitudes of Ukrainians to, you know, the great extent that it has. Now, what is he willing to do, or how far is he willing to go to try to reverse that is, of course, the big question that I think is unfortunately impossible to answer right now. You know, we certainly can look at what he's doing and make some assessments based off of that. You know, like you said, the massing of troops around Ukraine's border hasn't slowed. You know, according to all of the reports in the Post and the Times and my own reporting here among Ukrainian officials and speaking with U.S. officials also, you know, is that these troops continue to pour in, that they're starting now to see the logistical trail that is needed to sustain an attack for days, if not weeks, mm-hmm. if that's what Russia should plan to do. You know, we saw the really scary headlines, and I think the lead from the Post that you saw or that you read just a moment ago about, you know, what a full scale Russian offensive would potentially look like. And I think, you know, that everybody I've spoken with, and in my own assessment, I would say that's probably the least likely thing to happen. You know, military experts I've spoken with and used in my reporting have said, you know, Russia would need a significant amount more troops to carry out a full-scale offensive and occupy the country, right? Mm-hmm. Invading, attacking is one thing. Right. Occupying is another. You still need, you know, greater numbers in order to do that. But what I'm hearing is more likely would be some sort of limited incursion or attack that could target strategic regions of Ukraine or specific cities. Kharkiv is one that's been named, mm-hmm. not only by analysts, but also President Zelensky, in an interview with the Washington Post a couple weeks back, mentioned Kharkiv as a place that Russia might target because right. of its historically close ties to Russia, a larger Russian-speaking population than many other parts of the country. Kyiv is, of course, being discussed as a target because it's the capital, and it's certainly where the central government sits and where Zelensky's presidential office is headquartered. It's also seen as the birthplace of Kievan, historic Kievan Rus, and the cradle of Russia and Ukraine. That makes it of significant, historical significance, cultural significance for Moscow and Vladimir Putin. And so, that's also one thing that I think is increasingly being discussed. Kiev being a potential target for any Russian aggression. There are also a combination of other things that are possible and more likely than an all-out invasion. And they would include some kind of combination of cyber attacks, disinformation, these types of things that would be meant to cause internal destabilization in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And that's what really concerns the Ukrainian officials I've spoken with. And I've spoken with people in Zelensky's office as well as the National Security and Defense Council Secretary Alexei Danilov just last week. And he said, our biggest concern is internal destabilization because that could provide the pretext for Russia to launch an attack. Mm-hmm. And those types of things could be anything from a protest that gets out of hand, attacks on Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine, or the Ukrainian military. Or somebody who would be seen as being associated with the Ukrainian military launching some kind of artillery bombardment against the occupied territories in Donetsk and Lugansk and perhaps knocking out some kind of civilian infrastructure. So those are the kind of things that they're really worried about. One thing I wanted to mention was that there has been this difference in messaging between Ukraine and the United States. Mm-hmm. About the threat posed by Russia. And the Ukrainians have told me that it's not that they don't think Russia is capable or considering this. It's just that they see this buildup of forces and assess it slightly differently. The U.S. has said that an attack and an invasion could happen any day now, and they were even using the word imminent, right, which confused the Ukrainians to a pretty great extent. But what they see is this being Russia applying pressure, and they're really convinced that Putin has not made the decision to attack, let alone launch a full-scale invasion yet. They are still holding out hopes for diplomacy. I know that they're trying several things behind closed doors. They are putting a lot of weight in the diplomacy that French President Emmanuel Macron might be able to conduct, as well as the Germans, so not only the United States here, but its European allies. And, they are well aware of the Russian threat. They're not downplaying it, they say. They're trying to not cause panic and chaos. And part of their position here and their assessment and what some have called a lack of emotion on their part is largely due to the fact that they've been under Russian threat and had much of their country occupied for 8 years, and the war for them and the invasion for them has not ceased. It's this ongoing thing, and I think that's something that has not always been underscored in a lot of the discussions around what's happening right now.
Well, those are great. Those are great points. And a great explanation of the Ukrainian government's position, Zelensky's position. You mentioned kind of the they've been under this for 8 years almost, and you're saying I think they see the military buildup as pressure. It is clearly pressure. And then you mentioned the kind of possibility that could be used, or the fear among in the Ukrainian government. Some of the biggest fears are of internal destabilization caused by Russia. That kind of emphasizes, because I'm sitting here and I think a lot of people think of, well, okay, Russia will invade or it won't invade, and that's one of those two things will happen, and there are various gradients of what kind of an invasion it might be if it does happen. But then, as you say, there's also the idea that this is actually pressure that is happening now with the buildup, and that could lead to any number of things and could work in Russia's favor. So it's kind of part of the whole pressure that will, even if diplomacy kind of prevails, at least for the time being, that pressure, you know, may not go away. So it's just something to think about. Well, Chris, you know, thanks very much. Really great assessments, great insights on what's happening and what the mood and the thinking is there in Kyiv. We're running out of time, and we will wrap it up here. Chris, thanks very much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead podcast, and please check out my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.